Welcome to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, covering car culture and the automotive world with Shane Osborne, Brady Wright, and Steve, the producer, Johan. Let's see what's up this week.
Kind of grooving in the background with all that guitar music there. Hey, here's what is happening this week or so, yeah. I got another episode of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. I'm Brady Wright. A lot of years of broadcasting, more than that as a custom bike and sometime hot rod builder. Shane Osborne, who's today not with us because he is celebrating his birthday, 29 again.
Yes.
And he's also puttering around the basement of E-Company Customs,
Costumes.
He's brewing up a batch of
Well, Halloween's going to be here not too long.
I don't want to know what he's coming as.
Yes.
It's a frightening prospect.
Yes, it is.
Anyway, he's getting ready to do a big exhibit down at the Edmunds Classic Car and Motorcycle Show this weekend. And, of course, we would be remiss if we did not mention Steve, the producer, Johan, who has been producing podcasts for more years than there are Captain Crunch in the box. And how is your El Camino, by the way?
It is sitting there gathering dust.
but not getting any fewer pieces. You have every piece, don't you?
I have pretty much every
piece.
Although I have to get... Well, when I go to do the full restoration, there is all the interior will be completely replaced because somebody painted the interior, which is supposed to be the tan.
Yeah.
They painted it black because that was what everybody did.
Yeah.
So
as long as they didn't do it with a brush.
No, they spray painted. But everything, you know, from the kick panels on through. So all that stuff will have to be replaced or repainted and all that kind of
thing. Are you going to go back to tan?
Oh, I'm going to go back to the original.
Nice.
Off the show.
Well, that'll be fun.
Burgundy paint, stripe, and all that good stuff.
That'll be fun.
But
well, don't leave it sitting out someplace. Did you hear, this is probably, you know, cars get stolen, parts get stolen, stuff happens, you know, to cars. It's not a new story. But there was a piece of car theft just recently that I had to scratch my head.
Yeah.
Somebody broke in to the area up at E-Company Customs.
Okay.
And they took the dumbest stuff you can imagine. They tried to steal the propane tank off the forklift.
Okay.
So we know we're dealing with brain trusts.
Yes.
Apparently, they also stole the gear shift knob off the 50 Buick that's sitting out there.
Oh, wow.
Now, there's razor wire fence up there now, but why? If you had the whole car, you only wanted the gear shift knob? These are not brain trust thieves, believe me.
Sounds like my son's car last night, I get a call. Dad, I'm down here in Seattle. I parked in a garage thinking my car would be safe. I came back, and the window was busted in.
Oh, man.
And they took about four things of no value whatsoever.
Yeah, except they probably thought they could hawk them quick and get some money. It's just sad.
Yeah.
Hey, there's a bunch of stuff going on in the automotive world, as we usually talk about at this time of the show. And I have every confidence that Steve has grabbed a bunch of cool things. So what you got? What are we going to talk about today?
Well, I've got a few things. And first up is a Dyson update. Dyson is building a 10-mile track, which is part of a larger $150 million campus, slated to be built on the site of a World War II era airfield in Western England.
These are not the vacuum cleaner people.
Really?
Dyson?
Dyson
really?
Announced last year. He was trying to keep it under wraps for a long time, and it got snuck out that he's developing an electric car.
How have I missed this?
That should hit the road in 2020-2021. It makes total sense, doesn't it? He's an engineering gadget kind of guy.
Oh, yeah.
He's made tons of money off of his funky looking vacuum cleaners, bladeless fans, air purifiers.
Yeah.
No,
it's all
and
good
I'll
stuff.
Tell you what, I'm more
expensive
impressed.
Stuff, but good
yeah.
stuff.
But here he's going to do this. They're going to use a old World War II era airfield, and they got enough room to put a 10-mile track, which is, I think, it's awesome.
Sure.
So that's coming on the scene. We'll have to keep in track of that.
Well, yeah, let's track that. That'd be fun to watch.
And while we're speaking of Europe, Times of London reports that Ford will be eliminating production of the Mondeo, the global name for what in the U.S. is known as the Fusion, as well as its Galaxy S-Max People Movers. Paper said Ford also wants to reduce the number of dealerships it produces in its products are sold throughout Europe. A cutback in the passenger car models, as we know, is going on here in the United States.
So they're doing the same thing in Europe now.
I think so. And they're saying, that's not going on from the official, but I think that's definitely going on.
I got to say, the car buying sort of climate in Europe is very different from
yes.
here. The roads are different. The distance between, you know, point and departure is different, and the sedan has been like the thing.
Oh, they there. Are. Yeah.
So I'm wondering if they're doing it because they're doing it here, or if there's actually a, I mean, I find it hard to believe they wouldn't have done some market research, but that's kind of an odd thing.
It is. And then speaking of closing things down, for those who do not know, but Brady will, big news in the motorcycle world, Modus Motorcycles is closing its doors.
Yes.
And it's decided it was no longer profitable to keep the company open. I don't
yep.
know if it's ever been profitable because it's one of these great, cool,
yeah.
original platforms.
Great idea.
Great idea.
Didn't quite catch on.
Didn't.
A lot of interesting engineering. You know what happens, though, with stuff like that is they got a lot of really interesting new kind of new age, high impact, low drag tech stuff that will get folded into other models. You know, people will use that tech. They will use
those. Well, it was based off of V4.
Yeah. They'll use those things in other
Well, they
other
did
bikes.
Have them in other platforms,
yeah.
but they just couldn't get the traction.
Yeah.
And having just closed off my World of Motorcycling podcast, I understand 11 years of doing podcasting around motorcycling, and I could never get the amount of listeners nor sponsorship that I needed in order to tell myself I can justify another night out in the week and all these hours. So that closed off last week. Of course, this show is going great. It's building every week, and we appreciate your listenership for that.
Well, thank you very much.
another thing I came across is EV Alert, and that is Rivian, a California-based startup company looking to move into the space that Tesla currently occupies, is planning to show off a battery electric pickup truck
okay.
in a three-row sport utility vehicle at the Los Angeles Auto Show in November.
Interesting.
RJ Scaringe, Rivian's founder and a chief executive officer, said during a recent appearance in Detroit that the introduction will change the perception of EVs. The auto industry is now on the verge of sweeping change. So he said, think about the tech industry in 1991. And they've already raised $500 million in capital, and they expect to launch in 2020. With a target of building 50,000 vehicles annually at a plant in Normal, Illinois, that is acquired from Mitsubishi. So those are, I'll tell you what, 2020, 50,000. Now, Elion
did you say 5 million in capital?
500 million.
Oh, 500. I thought
I
you said 5.
I don't think that's anywhere close to having enough money.
No, 500 Not when you can is seed money at that point.
Steve Wynn built his beautiful Wynn Vegas
yeah.
For over $1 billion, and that's a building. So
yeah,
you can't build a plant.
It's kind of apples and oranges, but still.
Well,
if
a factory
is
going to cost a lot more.
Well, if you buy one that's already set up, you've got a line, you got to retool. That's nowhere near as expensive
True.
As
okay.
putting up a whole building.
Okay.
But yeah, I understand what you mean.
Retooling
it's not
for all the
yeah.
parts?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
no,
my
I
goodness.
Have to redo the whole line.
Yeah. So good luck. We always like to see competition, and it's not my money they're putting into there.
You didn't
look.
I've
invested
stock?
Thousands into my own shows in hopes, and I know how that goes. So when you have other people's money, it might be a lot easier.
Well, maybe.
And then the other thing I did come across is car dealerships still having plenty of 2018 models sitting on their lots while the 2019 models are being rolled out.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That is a... It might do well someday to get somebody who's been a long-time auto dealership owner. Actually, I know somebody in the area.
Yeah, several.
That we could bring on and say, what are the challenges? People look at your beautiful showrooms, your land there with all these cars. But what goes into running a dealership, keeping it afloat?
Oh,
and
sure.
And what is the overhead? So, yes, you know that in motorcycling, it's the same way. You've got the floor models that are 2018, the 2019s come in. And you're being pushed by the factory to get rid of the 2018s and push the 2019s.
Well, plus you get charged flooring. I mean,
if
you've got a motorcycle, a brand new or car, any new vehicle, you got about 90 days to turn it, and really about 60. And after that, they start charging you money.
Yes.
And you're crazy if you don't, you know, drop the bottom out and blow those things out of there, because otherwise you're stuck with all that overhead you got to eat.
That's right.
Not good.
That's right.
Hey, glad to have you with us. Today's trivia question's coming up. We are going to have our continuing conversation with automotive writer Ted Ebenhoff. All of that and more on Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
For all your parts cleaning needs, turn to Ravenstone Vapor Honing. Ravenstone Vapor Honing is a fast, economical, safe alternative to standard media blasting. Ravenstone Vapor Honing uses a system developed by Rolls-Royce back in 1944, a water-based cleaning system that restores parts back to factory condition with no scouring or heating to metal or damage to rubber and plastic parts. Ravenstone Vapor Honing is located in Snohomish, Washington. For all your parts cleaning needs, turn to RavenstoneVaporHoning.com. Redefining the way parts restoration is done.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go, Fish Dad!
Oh, come on! This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil. It only takes a moment to make a moment. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 877-4DAD-411 or visit Father.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school.
Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone.
I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone.
Hey everyone, Steve Johan here, producer of the Horsepower Chrome and Rust Show. If any of you have ever thought about or ridden a motorcycle, then I want to invite you to listen to a new show called World of Motorcycling, where we cover rider culture and the motorcycling world. World of Motorcycling is an informative and entertaining podcast featuring John Davis, Walt Fletcher, and me, Steve Johan. You can listen to the show at worldofmotorcycling.podomatic.com, where we'll be waiting for you.
This is Robert Durf with the Porsche Club of America Driver Skills Program. Thank you for listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. And just want to remind everybody that it's no fun unless it smells a little bit like burnt oil and burnt rubber.
My mind's out of gear, and my heart's in overdrive. I've everything to fear. I ain't never been more alive. I'm
Welcome back to the second segment of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. And it's usually time for our windshield view, where we do a lot of looking at what's going on in the world of cars and that type of thing and interesting people. And this week, as promised from last week, we are going to have our great guest, Ted Evanhoff, on with us. And just to give you a brief on who he is, Ted is a business columnist for the Memphis Commercial Appeal, an automotive writer for USA Today Network. And he also is a co-author of At the Crossroads, Middle America and the Battle to Save the Car Industry, published in 2010. And you can find that on Amazon and others out there. It's a great book. And he argues in that book, or he and his co-author argue, of Obama bailed out Chrysler and General Motors, but missed an opportunity to set off a manufacturing renaissance throughout the industrial Midwest. So, Ted, how's it going there?
Hello, Steve. It's going well. I'm happy to be on the show. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, you bet. Well, last time we left off, as Brady said, can we have you back on? You graciously said yes, and I thought, well, I'll call you this week and get you back on. We were talking about Chrysler and how Chrysler got picked up by Daimler, and then Daimler pitched him over to the hedge fund, Cerveus, and then we kind of left off there because we were in 2008, 3 million job loss, resources weren't too good, and Cerveus, is that Cerveus or Cerveus?
That's Cerberus.
Oh, Cerberus, thank you very much.
Cerberus, uh-huh.
Now, pick up there, because that's where we left off last time, is Cerberus, and how things took off from there.
Sure, Steve. Well, for a lot of people, we're talking about old history. In terms of automotive, we're talking about 2007, 2008. So you have Chrysler. It was actually started in 1904 as the Maxwell Company. They hired a guy named Chrysler, who was a real name at Buick Motor Division. He was the superintendent of Buick, a very innovative guy. Chrysler came over to Maxwell, and within a few years, Maxwell was known as the Chrysler Corporation, and it hung in there. Chrysler was the number three automaker in Detroit after General Motors and Ford. It was always number three, and as the competition became tougher, in the 80s and the 90s with transplants coming into the United States and imports coming into the United States, Chrysler had its own difficulties. It was taken over by Daimler, sold itself to Daimler, the German company, the manufacturer of the Mercedes-Benz. And in the late 90s, Chrysler became a German company, and they struggled into the 90s. And by 2007, 2008, there was some question of how Chrysler could proceed. One of their problems was they're a crowded market. You know, there are about 35 nameplates in the United States now. There might be the big three in Detroit, but there are another 32 other nameplates in the country. A nameplate would be Hyundai, Toyota, Chevrolet, yep. Chrysler. Dodge is a nameplate as well. Anyway, so it's 2007, 2008. The economy is slowing down. The U.S. is losing, has lost several million manufacturing jobs since 2000. Interest rates were starting to tick up. Home foreclosures began mounting, and Chrysler was in difficulty. They were acquired from Daimler by a hedge fund named Cerberus. Cerberus is well known in New York, big company. They had once made a run at Air Canada, trying to take over it. They had some other big names that they operated with, but nothing was as big as Daimler, or rather as Chrysler. And of course, Chrysler included Dodge at that time, and still does. But Chrysler continued to have difficulties going into 2009 as the economy slowed down. So we're at the deepest downturn in the United States since the Great Depression in the 1930s. And the Obama administration works out a plan to sell Chrysler, to take it out of the hands of Cerberus and put it in the hands of the people who own Fiat in Italy. And so at 2009, that happened. And Chrysler ever since has been part of a company called the Fiat Chrysler. The CEO was Mr. Marchione, who just passed away, considered a gifted executive. He is a Canadian, worked for the Agnelli family, the family that owns a major stake in Fiat. And he came in and he ran the company, and he looked at the market and they began, you know, Chrysler had always had a vehicle in each segment, you know, small car, mid-size car, large car, small pickup truck, big pickup truck, SUVs. And to some extent, under Fiat, Chrysler began focusing on what it did best, what did best in the market. And so, you know, they've expanded Jeep products. They've gone, you know, with the Dodge Ram trying to pick up sales on their pickup truck. And they've sort of cut back on the cars in the United States. And there's no real mystery as to why sedans and coupes just aren't selling to the extent they had, you know, 15, 20 years ago. People like the crossovers, and Jeep kind of embodies that. It's emblematic of what people want to drive. And so you see a number of Jeep products out there. All that said, with these 35 nameplates, in the market, you know, Jeep is ranked about number six in total sales, all the Jeep products.
Wow.
And then the Dodge Ram is number 11. But for the most part, the brands that really depend on cars are not doing very well. You know, Buick is number 18 in the market, even though they have a number of crossovers. They're just not doing very well. Chrysler, all its sedans and coupes, it's number 20. Cadillac is 21. Lincoln is 26. So out of these 35 nameplates that are out there, you know, the big three in Detroit, Ford and Chevrolet, part of General Motors, and Jeep are the highest. Ford is number one in the market, Chevrolet is number three, and Jeep is number six. And everything else is an international nameplate. for a lot of people, that doesn't matter anymore. When you think of a Honda Pilot, it has more domestic content in it than any vehicle, you know, produced in Detroit or by the Detroit automakers. But at the same time, it's if you're into the history of these car companies, you realize that this isn't the car industry of old. That the other than Ford and Jeep and GMC, the rest of the domestics and Chevrolet, I should add, the rest of the domestics are struggling to hold on to market share.
You know, we're going to come up to our break, and I'm going to hold you over because we're going to have you on for two segments on this show. But what there's a couple things that I wanted to talk about, and one is how Chrysler was kind of like the precursor of the new muscle car trend with the Chrysler 300, which eventually moved into the Charger, and then how the resurgence of muscle cars have become basically the only sedans that the big three are putting out. And then the other part that I want to touch on when we get on the other side is the changing demographic of the United States as far as a populist base goes. So you have a lot of people coming in, immigrants, a much changing demographic where they are much more, well, friendly and knowledgeable of these other brands, Hyundai and Honda and Toyota and all that. So hang on with me, Ted. I'm going to let everybody know this is Ted Evanhoff, author of At the Crossroads, Middle America and the Battle of Saved Car Industry, and automotive writer for USA Today. We'll be right back with more of Ted and the Horsepower Chrome and Rust Show. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, how would you like to have a chance to win a fully restored, four-on-the-floor, red 1965 Mustang? Well, you can. Linwood Rotary is raffling off this fully restored 65 Mustang at a car show near you. Chance to win this car is just $10 per raffle ticket. For more information and to find out where the car will be displayed, visit rotaryoflinwood.com/car-raffle. rotaryoflinwood.com/car-raffle. Proceeds will go into funding local charities.
Get ready. It's coming. The 18th annual Edmunds Classic Car and Motorcycle Show is happening September 9th, 2018. And yeah, you heard right. For the first time ever, classic motorcycles are included. If you have a hot rod, a rat rod, classic, custom, vintage car, truck, or motorcycle, this is the show for you. All vehicles must be 30 years old or older. That's 1988. This festival of steel and chrome will fill the streets of downtown Edmonds on Sunday, the 9th of September. It's a season-ending show, and it's all free to see. The streets will be lined with vendors, food, fun for the family, a pinup pageant by the Electric Pinup Dolls, and many special guests and one-of-a-kind customs. All new trophies and music from Danny Vernon. Register your entry at the Edmonds Chamber website or call direct. Pre-registrations get the best locations, so get on it right now. Still, just $25 per vehicle, as always. The Edmonds Classic Car and Motorcycle Show is coming to cap the summer car show season. Why leave town when the fun is right here? Go to EdmundsClassicCarShow.com or call the Edmunds Chamber of Commerce. Crank up your ride and we'll see you there.
Hello, this is Zach with Cascade Campers. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
Sensory sensitivity, repetitious behavior, lack of eye contact. You can see signs of autism in children as young as 18 months. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
More Horsepower Chrome and Rust after these messages.
Hey all you guys and gals. The next time you're hankering for a trip down memory lane, we recommend a visit to our Older Than the Hill Chateau d'Ishmael Resort in Boondocks, Idaho, where the rooms smell like week-old cigarette smoke and month-old beer. Every weekend during the summer months, we feature our Old Maid Punkle Run, Gooder Trash Clam Bake, and Big Ted's Keg Toss. And don't forget our complimentary Bloody Mary morning appetizers to chase away those late night reveries. Sure enough, when you want to travel back and enjoy those old biker smell, then come to stay at Chateau d'Ishmael, where our two mascots, Pit and Bull, will greet you at the gate and where we never leave the lights on. Because, hey, after all, we're going green. Chateau d'Ishmael, because nothing beats the old days of smoky bars, stale beer, and crap on the carpet than a visit to Chateau d'Ishmael. And for those who don't know how to spell Chateau de Smell, that's okay. We made it easy for you. It's smellit.com.
Welcome back to the fourth segment of the show. This is Cars Confidential, where we share all kinds of cool stuff. And, well, no, actually, we're in segment three. So sorry, folks, I am goofing up there. But we've got Ted Ebenhoff, and he's a great interview. And we're just talking about the automotive industry. And, Ted, you've been writing for, well over two, maybe three decades. Am I correct on this?
Yes, that's correct, Steve.
Excellent. Well, I wanted to leave. I kind of briefly told you what I wanted to talk about, and let's kind of move into. Brady and I were talking about this after we talked with you last week. We thought we got into muscle cars, and we thought, and he said, you know, I don't know when the Chrysler 300 came out, but it was still under the Mercedes. It was basically a Mercedes sports car, you know, their platform, and Chrysler came out, and it was a luxury car. And then he said, you know, the guys in the back said, why don't we put on a big engine in this thing and turn it into the Charger? And we think that that's kind of when the new resurgence, the muscle car era started. What's your thought on that?
I think that's true. I think, you know, Chrysler came out with the 300 in the late 90s. They came out with a particular version of the 300 called the C, which had a very big engine in it, a very nice engine in it. And you started seeing advertisements, particularly around Dodge trucks at the time, about the Hemi.
Yes.
There's a Hemi in it. And there was a new interest in cars that moved quickly and were considered high-performance engines. And you saw, out of that time, the Ford redesigned the Mustang. It went back to kind of its roots look. Chevrolet came out with the Camaro. And so you see these old iconic American cars, models and brands kind of out there. Part of it has to do with, you know, there was a part of America that never really walked away from those iconic brands. They kind of grew up with Camaros,
the baby
and
boomers.
Mustangs. Yeah, the baby boomers, and you know they remember the Dodge Super B from the 1960s with the big tail fin on it, and so these cars came back. There was always a segment there that was attuned to this, and you know there's actually an automotive historian named John Wolkanowicz who lives in Boston. He used to work for one of the big think tanks, and John always made the argument that, you know, Detroit is never going to succeed in making cars that emulate the Honda and the Toyota. Yes, you need quality and you need reliability, but you know what Detroit is known for is something that is different than what Honda, Nissan, and Toyota are known for. And so there was this sort of move afoot in Detroit to kind of tap into this, and came out with some really distinctive and quality cars. I don't know off the top of my head what the Ford Mustang is doing right now in sales, or the Charger or the Challenger, but where I live, I'm in the Mid South. These vehicles are fairly prominent in you know Tennessee, Mississippi, Georgia, Kentucky. This is a car that is still kind of cherished in this part of the country.
Oh, and they are here too. I go to the car shows, and whether they're old ones or new ones, you see them out. People love their muscle cars. And then it was kind of an interesting thing too, because you were saying that the Dodge brand itself was always playing catch up to the other Ford and Chevy. And what was interesting is when you looked at the pony car era of the muscle car, I mean, Ford already had its Mustang, the Chevrolet had the Camaro, and then of course the Pontiac had the Firebird, and these were small cars, pony cars as they were known. And it wasn't until the 70, okay, that the Cuda comes on board and the Challenger comes on board in 71, 72, 73. That's when the Hemi things come out and they start putting them in even dusters and stuff. And by that time, emissions were hitting and all the other companies were toning those things down. And it was kind of like Dodge finally got its, and it wasn't, they weren't putting out Roadrunners and stuff, but they finally hit that pony car era right then. But it was almost like a crest in the wave. They kind of over, it was like they played catch up and they came out with some beautiful cars, but it was almost like the horsepower per style, they kind of missed that boat. What do you think on that?
Well, let me think about that, because did they miss the boat?
I mean, not miss it, yeah. But they kind of came in a little later on that.
They came in a little later. I think one of the issues they've always had in Detroit is they're playing the game with gasoline prices, and so they never thought that trucks were really going to take off, and then
true.
Gas prices came down in the 90s and the big pickup trucks and the big SUVs began
true.
To sell, and then they raced there and they put all their money and bet all their chips on SUVs. This is in the 90s and into the 2000s, and so I think for a company, I think it's true for all of them. I think especially true for Chrysler with its Dodge products. There's only so much capital to go around, and do you put it where you think you're going to get the biggest bang, or do you think you're going to put it where you think there's going to be a small but significant market? I think they put it into their trucks and they put it into their engine plants. They didn't put the kind of money that they could have spent on muscle cars, and I think part of it was just the times. They didn't think there was a big enough market out there for muscle cars in the United States.
You know, that's a very interesting way of looking at it, because I wasn't into your, wow, I hadn't thought about it, but that's exact, yeah, trucks became a very big part of Dodge, and even in the late 60s, early 70s, they started really starting to see this trend, and then it's kind of funny how the gas prices go up, they come down, they go up, they come down, and even in the midst of a few years ago when it was $4 a gallon in some places, trucks are still very popular. So
yeah.
It seems like Americans like big cars versus you go to other places around the world, and I've been to some of them. Smaller cars have been in vogue for many, many, many decades. And yet it's because unless you're in Australia, and even then, four cylinders and six cylinders rule the world. But then, of course, that's because most people don't drive across the Nullarbor Plains. But here in America, we drive across America all the time. And I think the fact we want a car that's going to be comfortable to ride 300, 400, 500, 600 miles in a day if you want to do that, because it takes that time just to get across the state. Do you think there's some correlation between our love for larger vehicles here in America and that factor?
I think there is. I don't think Americans ever lost their interest in larger, more capacious vehicles, even when gasoline prices started to go up. I also think that trucks represent something. I remember Ford truck engineers in the 1990s and early 2000s were talking about the guys, the generation. The previous generation had driven Mustangs, Firebirds, and Camaros. The new generation, the same age that would have been driving those vehicles, was now buying F-150s and Dodge Rams. And this is kind of the Gen Xers, the guys who are now in their 40s. 20 years ago, they moved out of the Camaros and the Firebirds and into the pickup trucks, and they've never looked back. And what the auto companies have done is made the pickup trucks, you know, ever more luxurious. And so you have guys now who have some income, and they're buying $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 pickup trucks.
Yes.
Yeah, and they're not, you know, these are luxury prices, and they're going into pickup trucks. And it's a reason that Ford, you know, has led the country. I forget for how many years the F-Series pickup truck has led the country. I mean, even at years when Honda and Toyota between them sold, you know, a million Honda Accords and Toyota Camrys, the Ford F-Series always outsold those two models put together and does to this day. And there's just an American infatuation with these vehicles. I forget the company that commissioned the study, but they asked one of the big consulting companies to ask, what, this was back in the 90s, to say, what is it about Americans and their trucks? Why, you know, we drive around American cities and we see all these pickup trucks sitting in driveways. This is back when people were adding trucks to their pickup trucks, to their home fleet. People had always had a sedan and maybe a small car. Now we're buying trucks. Anyway, the consultants came back and essentially said that, you know, the pickup truck is the horse of the modern American cowboy. And you can kind of laugh at that, but I think a lot of people see this, a lot of guys especially, see this as their own kind of private island that they get into it, you know, and it kind of carries them away from the world. I don't know, maybe that's a little bit too dreamy, but I think there's a sense of it that, you know, there was a generation you got into a fast car like a Camaro and you felt you were a racer.
Yes.
Now you feel like your pickup truck kind of steals you off from the rest of the world, and it's your buddy to some extent.
You know, it's funny because I remember the time when all the pickups, everybody, all the young guys, whether it was Toyota or the Fords or anything, and the younger generation, because I'm 58, so the generation below me, they really got into jacking up the trucks, putting the lift kits, doing the big tires. And I thought, that's kind of like what we did with muscle cars in the 70s. Everybody bought the muscle car, put the big 50s on it, jacked it up, put the ladder bars, sway bars, all that stuff to make it more efficient. And the same thing that we did with our with the old 60s, whether it was a muscle car or just a Polaris that got converted into a muscle car, these guys are doing with their trucks. And it became, you're right, it became a love affair with trucks. And then all of the, I mean, there's as many magazines out there on the shelf dedicated to truck and four-wheel driving, off-roading and stuff, as there are to muscle cars and hot rodding. And I don't think it's not going away. And as these guys have gotten families, as if they've got, then they get more toys, they get the boats, they get the campers, they get the trailers, and now they have an excuse to have that truck. And even if they don't have the rest, that truck is still part of who they are. It's their DNA. And then they put the crew cabs on there. It used to be crew cabs were construction guys going out. Now everybody's got it so they can put their family back there. So you can drive down the road in luxury, 5 feet above the rest of the crowd in this big, huge truck. And you're right. It's a sense of it's a same sense that we got when we got in that muscle car. And heck, I've got my son's 92 just little pickup, little B2 B something Mazda pickup truck, and I'm enjoying just driving that around to and from work, and it's a small pickup, but I'm like, I get the pickup thing. I mean, it's like a different, it's a different world when you got a pickup truck, and even if you don't have anything in the back. So I think it's funny, even with gas prices what they are. And then I also wanted to talk to you, just like I said, when we're going to run out here, do you think the fact that of our changing country with different immigrants and stuff have made the imports much broader appeal, and that's why they're doing so well?
That's an interesting question. I have never seen a study that tried to correlate consumer habits with nationality. I don't know if Latinos prefer trucks or cars and what kinds of trucks or cars, but it's an interesting question. If you didn't grow up in a muscle car era, would you necessarily gravitate to that? I don't know.
True.
My sense, Steve, is that you look at these cars, and whether you're European, whether you're from Germany or Argentina or Mexico or Oregon, you look at these cars, and there's something in it that appeals to you. It transcends nationality and upbringing.
Well, Ted, I'm gonna interrupt because we have run out of our time.
Okay.
Thanks so much, and we're gonna bring you back on another time. Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. I enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Ted, for coming on with us. Again, this is Ted Ebenhoff Great guy, and we'll have him back on in the near future. Be right back with a great story from Brady. For all your parts cleaning needs, turn to Ravenstone Vapor Honing. Ravenstone Vapor Honing is a fast, economical, safe alternative to standard media blasting. Ravenstone Vapor Honing uses a system developed by Rolls-Royce back in 1944. A water-based cleaning system that restores parts back to factory condition with no scouring or heating to metal or damage to rubber and plastic parts. Ravenstone Vapor Honing is located in Snohomish, Washington. RavenstoneVaporHoning.com, redefining the way parts restoration is done.
Listen, as a hiring manager, I've got to tell you, the best job candidate isn't always the typical candidate. Sometimes they're a grad of life.
Meet the grads of life. Young adults of unique determination and experience, an ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Sometimes the best candidates aren't the ones.
Stick around. We'll be back after these words.
Hey everyone, Steve Johan here, producer of the Horsepower Chrome and Rust Show. If any of you have ever thought about or ridden a motorcycle, then I want to invite you to listen to a new show called World of Motorcycling, where we cover rider culture and the motorcycling world. World of Motorcycling is an informative and entertaining podcast featuring John Davis, Walt Fletcher, and me, Steve Johan. You can listen to the show at worldofmotorcycling.podomatic.com, where we'll be waiting for you.
Get ready. It's coming. The 18th annual Edmunds Classic Car and Motorcycle Show is happening September 9th, 2018. And yeah, you heard right. For the first time ever, classic motorcycles are included. If you have a hot rod, a rat rod, classic, custom, vintage car, truck, or motorcycle, this is the show for you. All vehicles must be 30 years old or older. That's 1988. This festival of steel and chrome will fill the streets of downtown Edmonds on Sunday, the 9th of September. It's a season-ending show, and it's all free to see. The streets will be lined with vendors, food, fun for the family, a pinup pageant by the Electric Pinup Dolls, and many special guests and one-of-a-kind customs. All new trophies and music from Danny Vernon. Register your entry at the Edmonds Chamber website or call direct. Pre-registrations get the best locations, so get on it right now. Still, just $25 per vehicle, as always. The Edmonds Classic Car and Motorcycle Show is coming to cap the summer car show season. Why leave town when the fun is right here? Go to EdmundsClassicCarShow.com or call the Edmunds Chamber of Commerce. Crank up your ride and we'll see you there.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go, Fish Dad!
Oh, come on!
This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil.
It only takes a moment.
This is Elton Roundhill and Shane Osborne with E-Company Customs in Linwood, Washington. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
This is Cody with Bow Wow Air Cooled. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
This is Robert with Bonbrunner Motorsport. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
Hey, welcome to the fourth segment of the show. This is Cars Confidential. And as mentioned before, Shane is out celebrating his birthday today, so it's me doing all of this. We got a bunch of hot rod stories, and as Shane would say, Brady, what's the story this week? Well, it just so happens that I have a great story this week.
Excellent. Excellent.
We've been talking about, the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about this magnificent journey to the Pantera owners gathering, and young fellow, let me see. I'm going to try to find his name because I wrote it down earlier, but I didn't keep it. Hang on. His name is Chris Kimball. And the Pantera Owners Club of America had a grand rally in 2012, and Chris went. And it took him days and days and days to get there. He drove the car, and this is the...
when we last left off, he nearly got hit by a semi-truck.
That's right. Now, yes. This is actually from day six, so he's actually arrived at the rally now. And this is what went on day six. Today's activities began with a 40-minute drive from the hotel to what the Fun Rally program called the Scottsdale Auto Museum. Now, since Mike Thomas had flown to Phoenix and didn't have a car there, he hitched a ride with me. This was his first trip in the legendary Pandora. The museum is actually a private collection owned by, I believe, three different individuals, and it consisted of cars you've probably only seen if you visited the Pebble Beach Concourse or spent a lot of time reading the Robb Report. Many of these cars were 1950s or 1960s European one-offs, or maybe one of only several that exist in the world. Now, currently, the only way to have a chance to see these cars is to get a private invitation. However, they are hoping very soon to open a facility to the public as a museum. If they do, the first thing they should consider adding is air conditioning. I wore long pants thinking a museum would be cool. Well, it was cool in terms of what's in there, but not in terms of ambient temperature. The guy who gave us the tour was knowledgeable. He was entertaining. He's one of the people who worked on the cars, restoring them and keeping them in fine fettle. A full restoration shop was a part of the facility. This is a lot like Bill Harrah's old facility in Reno. The cars included quite a number of Zagato-bodied and other famous Coachworks Company specials, including Lancias, Ferraris, Porsches, Jaguars, a Bentley, a Lamborghini, Fiats, Maseratis, a whole bunch more. It was really unreal. The thing that fascinated me most is how a car can be worth $20 million when anybody could build 10 exact replicas for the same money. Now, I understand the car may have an incredible history. Maybe it's got racing provenance or famous owners or legendary features, but is that worth so many millions? I guess it is to those people who can afford such toys. All I know is that none of the cars, surrounded by any sort of stanchions or protections, we were asked not to touch them politely. I was terrified that I would peer into a priceless car and then sneeze all sorts of difficult-to-remove stuff into the 50-year-old leather that once touched Piero Carini's bottom. Many of these cars had raced in and sometimes won such events as the Mille Miglia or the Le Mans, and just knowing that I was around such rich history was an amazing sensation. It made the incredible experience. It's just that alone that made the entire trip worth it. Following the museum tour, we traveled to a restaurant called Carlsbad Tavern. It had a few decorations depicting bats. There seems to be an ongoing theme of dodgy marketing here in Arizona, Carlsbad Tavern being a play on Carlsbad Cavern, hence the bats. Pretty clever. Since I've been enjoying a rather bachelor-like meal plan on this trip, I decided to order a chicken salad for lunch along with three glasses of lemonade. Now, at first blush, this sounds as if it's first normal meal I've had. Well, the truth is they didn't have any ice cream, so I added a bunch of sugar to the lemonade since it wasn't very sweet, and then I had a piece of key lime pie and a glass of milk for dessert. Still, compared to what I normally eat, today's lunch was pretty much health food. I shared my end of the table with Mike Thomas, Dave Anderson, Steve and Kim Griffin, and John Callen. John used to own airplanes, but he doesn't own or has ever owned a Pantera. He was at the rally with his Pantera-owning friend, John McIver, and I asked him why he was at our table instead of his friend John's table, and he told me that's just the way it worked out. And I'm a bit suspicious of that explanation. I remember in high school I took a girl to a dance, and she ended up getting a ride home with someone else. She used the same excuse. Just the way it worked out.
Oh, yeah.
At lunch, we drove back to the hotel, and I began to feel a headache coming on. It turned into a nasty migraine, and if you've ever had one, you know how awful they are. If you haven't had one, you don't want to know.
Too much lemonade.
Yeah, this proved two things. The fact that I can eat a lot of ice cream and sugar isn't the cause of my migraines because I just had eaten a salad. Maybe eating health food is the problem. And two, stress cannot be the only reason I get migraines because right now I'm on vacation. So I get back to my room at 3 p.m. and I was dismayed to find the room hadn't been made up yet. So I hung a do not disturb sign on the door, tried to take a nap. I eventually resorted to taking my stupid overpriced prescription migraine medication. I got a few minutes of shut-eye. Sometime later, I woke to find it was almost 6 p.m., and that's when the drag races were supposed to start, so I hurried down to the parking lot and drove to the track. I needn't have worried about being late, since the program seemed to be off a little. The races were actually scheduled to start at 7, so I relaxed for a few minutes in the stands. There were only four other people seated, and I really enjoyed the temperature since the sun was setting, as finally becoming less than a million degrees. Never once did I wish I had dressed in layers. A few minutes after 7, the racing started, and it was really fun to see all sorts of cars screaming down the quarter-mile track. After a few runs, some of the Panteras were on deck. They sounded great, they looked fantastic, but most of their times were only moderate. One or two did quite well, but I think many Pantera owners are kind of reticent to push their cars real hard. It's too expensive and time-consuming to fix them when they break. I spent some time chatting with Clark and Wilma while I was there, and Clark actually ran his 9,000-mile time capsule Pantera down the strip. He may have achieved a 9-second run at 198 miles an hour, but my memory seems a bit foggy on that. At one point, a Bugatti Veyron made a pass. It did the quarter mile in just over 10 seconds, and therefore was unceremoniously booted off the track. The rule stated that cars weren't supposed to run faster than 11 seconds, which sounds like a pretty dumb rule to me. I thought the whole point of a drag strip was to determine how fast one could travel in a vehicle. It was probably something to do with safety. Ah, the good old days when race cars had rear drum-only brakes and flimsy suspension and the drivers wore short-sleeved shirts and caps instead of helmets. Actually, those days weren't so good after all. There have been some pretty horrific crashes throughout the history of auto racing. After getting my fill of drag racing, I drove back to the hotel, and I was thrilled to see the karaoke machine was set up. I asked the DJ if I could do a little number, and I sang with all my might. Clark and Wilma showed up poolside when the karaoke action was happening, so I dedicated a song to them. I'm pretty sure it was the highlight of their existence. They left right after that. I got back to the room and I found it serviced. However, I did a little experiment that I'd like to share with you. When I travel, I always resent the hotels trying to get me to use the same sheets and towels over and over again. Part of the joy at staying at a hotel and paying the big bucks for the service is knowing I don't have to lie in my own stuff every night, but instead enjoy the sweet smell of fresh linens every day. So on this trip, I called the front desk the first day I arrived and asked them for clean linens each day. The attendant said, no problem. They always do that anyway. I made it a point to ask about pillowcases, since it seemed to me that would be a time-consuming job that maids might hate and therefore skip. I should have been suspicious when, after the nice lady told me they always change the linens daily, I found the typical Save the Planet card in my room, indicating if I didn't tell the staff otherwise, my sheets and towels would not be changed daily. I thought about it and realized I may not be able to tell whether or not they were actually doing what they said they would do. I mean, I like to trust people, but I've been burned before, and now I'm a little more cynical, so I marked each pillowcase and sheet with a small blob of blue toothpaste this morning. The toothpaste would wash out without damaging the linens, and I could see if the sheets were really changed.
This guy's anal.
Guess what? Same sheets, same pillowcases, same residue. I may be exaggerating a little here. Nothing had been changed. How annoying, I told the guy at the front desk. I was a little disappointed. Is it the end of the world? Of course not. But I don't like being misled. I'll be interested to see if the telltale toothpaste wasn't that an Edgar Allan Poe story is still there tomorrow night. End of day six.
Not too soon, because there's our break. We're going to be right back with more of the show.
We will indeed.
A trivia question and a whole lot more. So stick with us. We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, how would you like to have a chance to win a fully restored, four-on-the-floor, red 1965 Mustang? Well, you can. Linwood Rotary is raffling off this fully restored 65 Mustang at a car show near you. Chance to win this car is just $10 per raffle ticket. For more information and to find out where the car will be displayed, visit rotaryoflinwood.com/car-raffle. rotaryoflinwood.com/car-raffle. Proceeds will go into funding local charities.
When you want the latest news and information related to the Canadian motorcycling scene, then turn to BeltDriveBetty.com, your trusted source for all things motorcycling. BeltDriveBetty.com, serving the Canadian motorcycling scene since 2003.
Hang on till right after these messages.
Do you suffer from gastrointestinal anguish after eating spicy foods at your local Mexican restaurant? Do you suffer outrageous amounts of flatulence after eating greasy foods at your local fast food joint? Do you suffer from acid reflux after ingesting copious amounts of alcoholic beverages at your local drinking hole? Then call the law offices of Ambulance and Chaser at 1-800-782-5377, where we've helped thousands of so-called victims just like yourself. If you call us today at 1-800-782-5377, we'll make sure to send you out our free guide, The Top 20 Medical Issues Most Likely to Be Sued Over. But act today, because the longer you wait, the less chance you have to win your case. The law offices of Ambulance and Chaser are making the most out of your misery. Please be advised, the law firm of Ambulance and Chaser is not licensed to practice law in all 50 states and may be called into question by the federal government for questionable practices.
I adopted Bento in 2010 from a shelter. A lot of people know him as Keyboard Cat.
That's just one adoption story that started at a shelter. Visit the Shelter Pet Project.
This is Robert Durf with the Porsche Club of America Driver Skills Program. Thank you for listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. And just want to remind everybody that it's no fun unless it smells a little bit like burnt oil and burnt rubber.
Help us if you can. You're an El Camino. El Camino man. Only you can understand. Help us if you can. You're an El Camino man.
Help us if you can. You're an El Camino man. Yes, indeed. Steve, the producer, Johan. the El Camino Man.
I mean, when I got that from our
I like it.
Great
yeah.
friend of the show, I thought, this is going to be in there.
It's, of course it is. Hey, this is the fifth and final segment of the show. By the way, the excerpt from the old Carnot book, that was number 3. Thanks to David Dickinson for allowing us to read those. Again, they are available at oldcarnutbook.com and on Amazon. They make a terrific gift. This week, last week, we had a tremendous trivia question that was really a cool one. And by golly, the answer to where the first drive-in gas station was and who had it was solved by a guy from Olympia named Eric Egbers.
Excellent,
Eric sent me a Facebook message. He said, I know the answer to that. And it turns out he was correct. Who opened the first drive-in gas station? Why, friends, it was Gulf. Gulf opened it up in Pittsburgh in, are you ready, 1913.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. There was only 6 cars then. And so, you know, 4 of them, that was a huge success because Sully had to go there. Anyway, congratulations
to
Eric.
Knock out the knocks with Gulf.
That's right. That's right. God, I'd forgotten that.
Bob Hope.
Yeah. Anyway, Eric wins his very own monogrammed, custom chrome-plated bucket of Barn Find Dust, which is, of course, the prize for all of our trivia contest winners. And we'll be shipping that to Eric along with something else that we don't have. That's And if you know the answer to the upcoming trivia question, why, you can get to us on Facebook at horsepowerchromeandrust.com. You can also get to us on email at contactus@horsepowerchromeandrust.com. And you too can win your very own bucket of Barn Find Dust, which if you sprinkle liberally over your car will quadruple its value without doubt. Here is the trivia question for this coming week. Parking meters is the subject. What city was the first to use parking meters? And you might come up with a year, maybe, but you'll never get the city. It's the least likely city, I think, that you would suspect.
And I've got a secondary to that. If you just want to think about this for a moment, what great movie featured the protagonist doing something wrong to parking meters?
That covers a lot of ground. What do we mean by
that
wrong?
That got him in prison.
Ooh, all right, very good. So a twofer. What city was the first to use parking meters? And if you want an extra point, you can tell us what year it was. And what movie showed the protagonist doing something weird with parking meters that got him thrown in jail? Oh, this will be a good one.
Yes.
You can get us at horsepowerchromeandrust.com. You can go to our Facebook page, which is the same. And if you come up with it, your bucket of barn dust is waiting, friends.
And we've got a big announcement. We've got the big show coming up this weekend.
Yeah, that's right. It's going to be huge. The 18th annual Edmunds Classic Car and Motorcycle Show is this weekend in Edmunds, Washington.
Yep.
Marvelously done over 6 square blocks of the entire downtown core of the city. It runs from 10 o'clock in the morning until 5 o'clock in the afternoon. There will be special guests. Steve Walker with his Diamond T racing truck will be on hand. We got dragsters that are going to fire up and cackle 2 or 3 times during the day. We have a pinup contest, actually a pageant. It's not a contest, it's a pageant. There's a difference. A pinup pageant sponsored by and produced by the Electric Pinup Dolls will happen at 11 o'clock. And let's see what else. E-Company Customs will be down there actually building pieces and parts of cars. They're bringing tools and all kinds of stuff. And right next to them will be the booth. Heavily populated by all your friends from Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. Steve will be there at the Rotary booth, but he'll make an appearance.
Have to be at the Rotary booth too much.
Oh, good. So Shane and I will also be there. Yep. We look forward to seeing you, so please come down and enjoy the thing. That is just going to be the weekend's top event. There's a couple of other things going on, of course, but you know what's really more important? I mean, after all.
Oh, that's it. And it might be a little rainy, but who cares?
You know, they say clouds and a possible chance of shower, but you know, it's Seattle.
That's Seattle. Do?
Hey, the music's our cue to hit the gas. Until next week, thanks for liking and following our website and our Facebook page. Check out the archives for all our shows at www.horsepowerchromeandrust.podomatic.com. For Shane Osborne, happy birthday, buddy, and Steve Johann, I'm Brady Wright saying keep your eyes on the road, your hands on the wheel, and your foot to the floor. Slide on by next week for another edition of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.